This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, this is Marty McCoy from The Lonely Ones. Rock is not dead.
Yeah, it's always raining in my head, and I can't get out of bed. I got the eternal sadness. I had a dream last night.
Welcome to Cobras and Fire. This is LC, and I am with Marty McCoy of The Lonely Ones today, and formerly of Bobo Flex. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm excellent, and glad to have you on the show. Bobo Flex is they're basically one of our, I would say, the newer crop of bands about a decade ago that kind of gave us hope for rock and roll. Ones like Texas Hippie, seriously, it's like Texas Hippie Coalition, Danko Jones, Mustache, Monster Truck, just to throw a couple of the ones out there. So, you know, happy to have you on the show. And
I'm glad you put us in with Monster Truck. I love that band.
Yeah, they're just excellent band. And yeah, so essentially I just wanted to kind of start off with just talking about the Lonely Ones and kind of how that came about and kind of the plans for this new band of yours.
All right. Well, the Lonely Ones came about. Boba Flex was doing really, really well. We had built this thing up from the garage all the way to the big stage. And I was having the time of my life and was really seeing, you know, the crowds bigger and bigger and the Spotify numbers and radio stations and all that stuff. Really, really finally getting to a place where I felt, you know, not like a loser.
Okay.
Not like a loser with cool hair. And then my brother, who was, you know, a founding member and huge driving force with me behind in the band, he decided that, you know, he wanted to be home and his daughter turned 13 years old. And that was a huge milestone in his life and her life. And he was like, you know, he just didn't want to miss any more piano recitals or miss any more, you know, volleyball, you know, games or anything like that. So he decided, you know, it was time to come home. And that's when he was his happiest, as you know, when he was being a dad. And we could see that. We could see it on his face. It was, you know, glaringly obvious. He loved being in the band and loved being on stage and touring and stuff, but he was the most happiest. That piece that was missing was that constant in his life of being home and, you know, being the dad. And so we understood. I mean, it was heartbreaking and stuff, but we supported him and understood exactly where he was coming from. And the rest of us, the remaining members of Boba Flex, were like, well, we feel like we're just getting started, you know. So we decided, it's like, you know, let's change the name, because Sean was such a huge driving force that it wouldn't have been right to continue as Boba Flex without him, which was scary at first. But then after, you know, we had, you know, processed this information and realized it was over, it was like a breakup. You know, once you get over the heartache, you realize you get to go out and find new things. And so it was really exciting for us to, you know, and I wouldn't say we started over, because we have such a loyal fan base and wonderful people that surrounded Boba Flex. It was like, instead of starting from square one, we felt like we could start about square five and do something new and exciting and do things differently. So that's where we're at. And so far, so good. You know, besides the pandemic hitting right when we lost or launched a new group. That was a bit strange. It's like, there's our first hurdle.
And then they also, you're like, Sean, look, you didn't have to tour anyway. Right.
Not enough time to where you were like, let's get back on the road. But yeah, so, you know, Jimmy and I and Tommy and Jake were heartbroken and kind of, you know, it was freaked us out. It was like, this is something we put our lives into and now it's over and there's no turning back. What do we do? And then we decided, you know, we enjoy playing music with each other. Like I said, we were just getting started. We're hitting our stride as writers. I think, you know, with the Boba Flex stuff, we were getting better and better every album. So it just made sense to continue, change the name. That way we could, you know, Boba Flex is great. I love it, but I want it off of me. You know, I want something new. I want this excitement, this, you know, kind of thing. And so when we decided to do that, everybody's attitudes kind of changed. Like, oh, okay, these are the cards we're dealt. Let's play our hand. And it's us four members. We're a well-oiled machine together. Like I said, we're hitting our stride and riding together. And we just decided let's use everything that we had for Boba Flex and that excitement of, you know, from the industry of who's this new band. And let's see what happens. Let's see how it goes. And we've been really lucky with our fan base. They've just kind of, you know, just kind of moved over with us. We were like, yeah, sucks, Boba Flex is over, but let's see what you guys got. And then we released our first song and they were like, we're all in.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, first off, what an album to go out on, you know, Eloquent Demons. I mean, I
love that record.
We have all kind of a scale of, you know, albums that hit all the check marks, and the album cover, you know, amazing. You've got,
that's Kyle Hotz. Kyle Hotz did that. It's Hotz. And he's a comic book artist, and he was, we found out that he was a fan of the band, and you know, we thought, you never know. Like, we asked this guy, like, oh, we love his work. My brother's a huge comic book fan and knew exactly who he was and asked, you know, just sent him a message. And he's like, oh, I love the band. I'd love to do it. And that was one of the first times that we'd ever sent something to an artist and his first rendition came back. We were like, oh, my God. My brother said, make my horns bigger than my brother's. That was the only change. And so he blew us away with that. And it's one of my favorite album covers that we've ever had.
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming the title was first. You said, we're calling the album Eloquent Demons. And they went from there. Is that kind of what it was? Yeah.
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 Sean came up with the name and I was like, oh, I love that name. That's amazing. And then the guy sent, you know, Sean, and he talked on the phone for like 20 minutes. And that was the thing he sent us back. That was the cover he sent back. And I was just like, my jaw dropped. I was like, that's amazing. I mean, he nailed Jimmy and Tommy, like, on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
On Facebook, if they put that picture up, it tags them because it's so, you know what I mean?
Oh, you mean automatically it does. Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
He knocked it out of the park. And, you know, I couldn't have been happier. And it was a dream for my brother for Kyle to do the album cover. It made him so happy. And like you said, what an album to go out on. I listened to it the other day. And not to toot my own horn, I was on a long drive and my Bluetooth was acting weird for some reason. And so I was like, oh, well, the Eloquent Demons album is on the floor, a floorboard of my car unopened. So I popped it in and listened to it all the way through, you know, without a producer ear and without that kind of, oh, we could have done this different. I hadn't listened to it so long. It was like, it was new to me again. And I was like, this is a sonic masterpiece. This album rules. Why did you quit? What the hell's the matter?
I think my two favorite albums are Charlatan's Web and that one, because they're quick hitters. You know, you got just basically nine songs, an intro, and the production on those. I was going to ask too, is that, you know, there are bands with bigger budgets, things like that, and is this all done in the same studio? Because it's just the yep. sonics are excellent.
Funny that you said Sonics. The place is called Sonic Lounge. It's in Columbus, Ohio. It's in Grove City, Ohio. We've done most of our records there, and we've grown. The guy that owns the studio is my best friend. His name's Joe Veers, and I've been recording with him since like 97, 98, and I've seen him grow as a producer and an engineer and go from a great studio that worked out to having his own studio. I talk to him every morning. I talked to him for an hour and a half this morning. He's, like I said, one of my best friends, and he's incredible. And we've grown with him as songwriters, and I wouldn't go anywhere else. I'd love that guy. And he just gets better and better every day. And it's a wonderful, I've walked in there, 21 Pilots were in the studio. I've seen Star Set in there. I've seen the Georgia Satellites, Dr.
Okay.
Paul okay. Oates, and this guy's he's just incredible. And he's one of the most solid people that I've ever met. Just kind and just, if he says he's going to do something, he does it. And there's not a mean bone in his body. And he just works like, if we're going in to record a record, he just, you know, he's all in from start to finish and just really cares about our band. And I there's so many good things I could say about him. We could do an hour long interview about that studio and about, you know, Joe Veers. He's incredible.
Yeah, that's what really stands out as far as just the production is just outstanding. So I'm guessing that you also worked with him for Eternal Sadness, your first single. Is that same studio, same everything?
Absolutely. Yeah, we recorded. So that our record, the Lonely Ones record, is done.
That was my next question. If it was going to be an EP or a full length. Okay, excellent.
It's done, but as far as the music industry changes so fast, Jimmy said it the other day and it cracked me up. He said, I never thought, you know, my dream of being in a national touring rock band that I would say the word algorithm so much.
Right.
But, you know, so with the Spotify algorithms and things like that, the way people get their music these days, it's like putting out a full length album to me doesn't make any sense. It's like, you know, you got to stay in people's faces. So we're releasing each song as a single first. Then when we're done releasing singles, we'll put it out as a full length record and start working on the next one. Because my thoughts are, you remember what you saw on Facebook 15 minutes ago? The answer is no.
No, I agree. And I'll go into more about the Spotify and how that works for the industry, because we always hit on that too. But I got to tell you, you know, a lot of times when bands reform or do side projects or things like that, you're like, ah, how is this going to go? But when Eternal Sadness hit, I was like, wow, this is
in your face.
It's got, I mean, from everything, from the bridge to Next Level to the outro with the vinyl, you know, sound and things like that. I was like, okay, I'm in. Just like you said, you know what I mean? So it wasn't really a deviation from kind of the sound you created. Would you agree?
I would say it's a deviate. I would say the plan was to take all the things that we did in Boba Flex that we really liked and were our strong suits and push them 110%. And all the things that we didn't like, never do again. And okay. The other difference is that Jake and Jimmy are original members of this band. And in Boba Flex, we never told them, you know, you can't do this. And Sean, Tommy, and I are the leaders, and this is just how it goes. We would never do that. But subliminally, I feel like they felt that way a little bit.
Sure.
You know, they were able to spread their wings and do what they could do in Boba Flex. But with this band, it's they're in from the ground up. So their influencers are definitely coming in way stronger. And I love that. I think it's great. Jake is a more modern kind of guy, you know, like bands like Bring Me the Horizon and I Prevail and stuff that he's really turned me on to. And Jimmy's more of a 70s kind of guy. Me and Tommy are more like Pink Floyd and Tool. And so, like, all these influences are coming in with no bias and you know, let's just write a great song. And it doesn't matter, you know, who came up with it or what influences it comes from. And we always did that in Boba Flex, too. But this, you know, it feels like they're – not that they weren't invested. They were 100% invested in Boba Flex. But this feels like, you know, it's their baby from the ground up as well. And they're definitely a lot more vocal and a lot more, you know, things that where they felt maybe they were stepping on toes. They don't feel that way now. They're like, no, this is what I think. And then it's like, cool.
So when picking the name Lonely Ones, I mean, where did that come from? I mean, why so lonely?
Well, okay. So it's quite a good story. Well, not a good story, but there's many reasons. When you're in a rock and roll band and you're living your dream, and you're going out on the road and you're playing shows and the crowd singing back to you. It's this huge high feeling. But you lose relationships back at home. You lose, you know, I had some really personal stuff that was devastating to me that happened right before Sean left the band. It was like this huge shit storm. I mean, are we allowed to cast on here?
Yeah, you can say whatever you want. Please, okay. Please. We celebrate profanity.
All right. It was this huge shitstorm of things that happened to me all at once. It was like, and, you know, I realized part of it is because of my lifestyle and the occupation that I chose. It's like the reason why Sean left the band. It's like it is a wonderful job. But you miss things like, you know, volleyball games and birthdays. And, you know, we got to the level in our career that we didn't miss Christmas and Thanksgiving and birthdays and shit like that. But, you know, the everyday thing of, you get home at 5 o'clock and your significant other's there and you have this normal life. That's not feasible for what we do. So that's kind of lonely. You know what I mean? It's like you have these wonderful moments where you're singing and there's 1,000 people in the room singing back to you and that huge high. And then you go head down the highway in your bunk for 12 hours while right. Other people go home and kiss their wives and, you know, wake their kids up for school and stuff like that. We don't have that. That doesn't happen for us, which is okay. I'm fine with that. But, you know, there's moments where you're like, you know, I wonder what that would be like.
Like, you think about that sometimes when you're showering at 24-Hour Fitness?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's kind of your style, right? You got the tour bus, and that's it. You go town to town and avoid hotels. I think that came up in a previous, yeah.
Yep, we go to the Planet Fitness, and we take showers. And we
Planet, all right. Yeah. Okay.
And we work out. I give Planet Fitness a plug. They've been really good to us. you know, and you go work out, you take showers, and it's, you know, it becomes kind of, you know, a welcoming place because they're pretty much laid out the same. So that becomes your morning routine. And you know, but it is one of those things. It's like I've lost relationships that I really didn't want to lose because things, not anybody's fault. Things just happen, you know. It's like, people have children and people want to have children or people want to do these things that sometimes I can't do because, you know, I'm in, you know, Cedar Falls, Iowa, playing a show that's very important to me and to other people. You know, after a while, it's the mystique and the stigma wears off of, oh, it was cool dating this guy in a band. but this guy in the band's never here.
Right.
It gets a little lonely, and it doesn't only suck for us. It sucks for the people you're trying to forge these relationships with. It's like, God, it's got to be rough to be like, okay, well, you know, I'm sleeping alone again tonight because my significant other is, a thousand miles away.
And I'm sure that kind of goes into the songwriting for like Eternal Sadness, which is one of my favorite type of songs, where it's the subject matter is a bit dark, and then but it's actually an upbeat song.
I love to do that, where it sounds like a party, but then if you dig in, you're like, oh,
right, exactly.
And I feel like that connects with people a lot. So that was the point of Eternal Sadness. Was I was really down in the dumps. Like I said, I had some personal stuff going on that was I didn't see coming, hit me like a Mack truck. And I was really down in the dumps. And then Sean decides to leave the band. So the two things that I thought were a very solid, consistent thing in my life that were very important to me are now gone. Out of nowhere. Bam. Nothing I can do about it. So I was in a pretty dark place, and some things ran through my head that never ran through my head before. And so that's what I wanted to do was, instead of, it took me a while to realize a lot of people feel this way. And I always, feelings and things like that, I kind of push them away like, ugh, that's lame. Don't be that way. So that's the concept of that song was I really had to get this out on paper. But at the same time, I felt like, oh, depression's this new thing. Everybody's doing it. That's why it has that swing kind of 60s dance feel like it's the new thing, like the jitterbug. Everyone's doing it. And you can do okay. It. Yeah, it's hip. It's cool. You can do it, too. It's how I felt like, oh, OK, I'm one of those guys now. I didn't want to be that way. So that was the whole concept. The song was, has many, many levels or many layers like an onion.
Sure.
Like a delicious, sad onion.
Okay. A delicious, sad onion. working title, right?
I think so.
Yeah. So I got The Lonely Ones, the song, which came, I know that you said that the inspiration for it, but which came first, the chicken or the egg, song or band name?
Eternal Sadness was first, The Lonely Ones was second.
I am the lonely one, and I ain't seen the sun since I left home. Take me in your arms, tell me I belong, and let me rest my soul. You let me rest my soul. To light shine through on the other side, and everybody wants to take what's mine. I've been burned so bad, still got smoke in my eyes. Treat me like a dog. You know it hurts so bad, why did it stay so long? Yeah, nobody cares about the path I'm on, so I guess I'll just stay gone.
The name came first, and then the song came second. And it was the same kind of concept. It was like, the life changing events, and then I really got to see some people's true colors, and like, oh, okay. So that's the lonely one was like, when I wrote that song, it was like the lyrics are so true. It's not just hey, these are lyrics that everybody can connect with. These lyrics are really personal. Like the line, I've been stabbed in the back so many times, some things that happened. I was like, I can't believe this is happening. And this, you know, this person that I trusted just did this. Oh my God. And, you know, my eyes were open, you know, wide open. And so, yeah, those lyrics are absolutely, they sound kind of like, you know, kind of like they could mean anything, but they mean, you know, they are things that happened like literally right in front of my face. So I'm not talking about, oh, this is generalized. It's like, nope, this is about what this happened last week. This happened today. And this happened 24 minutes ago.
Yeah.
So it's pretty, like I said, and that's why Flash came about, just because Jimmy was like, dude, you're in a dark place, and the album and the music was reflecting it, which I like, but we need some kind of uplifting thing on this record, for God's sake.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, so you can't be more upbeat than Flash or pretty much anything by Queen.
You know, yeah, a cartoon upbeat hero that's going to save us all. I was like, well, that'll balance it out.
That's right. It was an interesting.
It had to be extreme because it was a pretty dark record.
I gotcha. Will there be, so on this record, besides like including that, will there be anything like Lights Out or more, you know, party type songs too? Or is it all kind of that same vein?
It's all pretty dark.
Okay.
But the next song, that we're coming out with is a love song. It's called Real Big Trouble. It doesn't feel like a love song. Like you said, it's, you know, I like the meanings to be, you know, not wildly obvious. I think we got to dig in. It's called Real Big Trouble, and it's like, you know, met a girl and it's like, I'm never doing that again. And then some things happen. I'm like, oh man, I'm in trouble.
I gotcha. Yeah. So here's
the song's about, I was like, oh man, I'm doing it again. I'm in trouble. And Jake was like, so Jake's, this next song, the next two songs that are coming out, you can really feel Jake's guitar style really coming through. The last two songs were more my guitar style. The next two songs are Jake's guitar style. They're a lot more complicated riffs, a lot more metal influenced, which is Tommy's bread and butter. You know, Tommy's a metal guy. You know, his playing styles like that. So we kind of had to, you know, Jimmy's kind of more loose rock kind of feel guy. Jake's guitar style, these next two songs are definitely more Jake influence on the guitar, which is awesome. I'm excited for everybody to hear it.
Cool. Here's a quick question from one of our fans who actually saw you your last concert. I think you're officially last Boba Flex concert in Indy. Does that sound right? Or outside of Indianapolis? Was that your last?
Yeah. And okay. We were a four piece then.
Yes. So that was my question, is he said that he heard a new song that day.
Yep.
And he doesn't remember what it was. Which one was it?
It was The Lonely One.
Okay. That got it. So that confirms his question. He wanted to make sure that was correct. A little trivia. So, oh, I did not know that though. Sean was already not in the band at that point. Got it.
Yeah, okay. He just, like, we had another 6-week tour, and he was like, oh, I can't do it, man. I can't do another 6-week tour. Because last two years, we did 153 shows, 160 shows a year. That's a brutal schedule.
My God. Every other day, basically.
Basically, yeah. And he was just like, ah, man. And we had to meet our obligations. And we thought, too, you know, it was discussion between the five of us. It was like, well, we need to figure out, we'll go out and do it as a four-piece, because we need to figure out if this four-piece thing's going to work.
Right.
It's a Lonely Ones model that we want to do. We didn't want to bring anybody else into the band, because it's like, well, there's another person, you never know what you're going to get. We know what we're going to get with the four of us. We're all on the same page, so we'll go do this last Boba Flex tour, meet our obligations and for the fans and for the, you know, the promoters and that kind of thing. Can you hear me? Somebody's calling in. Is that messed
up? I totally hear you.
Okay. So we'll go do that, and that'll prepare us for hit the ground running with the Lonely Ones. It worked out well. Our first show was in front of like 9,000 people. It was like, okay, no chance to warm up anything. Just go. And it
Where
worked
was
out
that?
Really well. And we got really, really tight and really, really comfortable. It was a four piece. And that show that guy saw was one of the last ones where we were just firing on all cylinders.
Where was the 9,000 at? Some fest, I assume?
Yeah, it was Rock Fest. Rock USA or Rock Fest. One of them in Wisconsin. Always getting confused. It was incredible. We were headlining the second stage, and there were so many, it was outdoors. There were so many people that people were taking pictures of the concert. I don't even know how many people were there, but they were taking pictures where I looked like an ant on stage. Like, not like somebody's ant, but like the insect.
Right, right. I gotcha. A-N-T is what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So on that too, are you guys still based in Columbus?
Yep.
Okay. So the first time I saw you guys live was at Rock on the Range, I think in 2010 or 11, one of those yep. two. And the always thing, and I went to several ones after that, but I always thought curious, and we always go to the industry stuff, you know, that one is right in your backyard, but that was the only time I think you guys played there. And what was up with AEG or Danny Wimmer or what's...
Well, we played it twice.
Okay.
And they were both incredible for us. It was one of the coolest shows that I had ever played. It was outrageous. And the second time that we played, my parents came to the show, and my brother and I took off with my parents. We stayed for a little bit, and my parents were in town, and they're older, and it's a pretty good drive. So we, you know, went and had dinner with my parents and left the festival and we're on our best behavior. My drummer, Tommy, not my drummer. I hate when I say that. The drummer, Tommy's like the greatest drummer ever. He's a super chill guy. He's wonderful. So he stayed at the concert, had a good time. But we had a guitar player. I think this is what happened. I'm not sure. We had a guitar player, incredible guitar player at the time, but he got wasted. I think he fucking acted like a dipshit and caused us not to be able to come back.
Really?
I think okay. so. No one's ever come out and said that, but knowing how he, like, because I had to leave or I'd have watched him babysit him, like, no, he got shithoused. And he was an idiot when he was drunk.
So he was in the backstage causing issues and stuff.
I guess. I would, Boba Flex was notorious for our partying, but we were always cool. It wasn't like we broke bottles on the floor and screamed and yelled in trash dressing rooms. We just, you know, we had way high tolerances.
You were cool like Lemmy. You didn't cause any issues. You just drank.
I wouldn't say that cool, but I'd say cool.
Okay.
But I think that's what happened. No one's ever come out and said that. But I mean, as you know, the fan base that we had in the area and around surrounding states, it was like, I don't understand why we wouldn't have been invited back because of that, you know, because of what, you know, the fan base that we had and the people that wanted to see us there. I think that's what happened. I'm not sure because I wasn't there. But if I was a detective, I would say that messed it up for us.
Wow.
But,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm not 100% sure, but that's why when everyone's like, the Lonely Ones, it used to be Boba Flex. I'm like, shh, quiet.
Yeah, be quiet so you can get hooked up on those. See,
Rock in the Range again. I want to play Sonic Temple so bad again. It was so much fun. And it was, oh, God, how many people see you there? I mean, that's like, that's, you know, that's the equivalent now of what we have going on tour with Ozzy Osbourne and no one knowing who your band is. And then when the tour is over, everybody knows who your band is. And it's right. Like, I love that experience so much. And I think that's what, like I said, if I was a guessing man, I would think that's what happened. And I can understand that. I won't mention the guy's name, but I had many instances of like, what are you doing?
Why? Gotcha.
We had another guitar player, our original guitar player, won't mention his name either, did some dumb shit in the House of Blues in Orlando, Florida, and got us banned from there. And it's like, Jesus. myself, Tommy, and Sean are all like really super nice guys, and like we have to pay for these idiots' mistakes. It's like, that's why, you know, the new band, everybody's super cool. Their alcoholism is in check.
That's what I was gonna say. You said, like, can you play guitar and can you handle your alcohol? Those are the interview questions.
They're all super nice, super chill, super on the same page, goal-oriented guys. And it's like, you know, so hopefully we can mend that relationship. I think that's what happened. Like I said, I'm not sure, but I can understand why, if that's what it was.
No, I gotcha. Because basically what we've heard sometimes from bands is that the, these big fests that kind of play dirty and it's pay to play, or
never had that experience.
That's good.
And I've seen, you know, on Sonic Temple, I've seen bands like I've seen bands on there that I've never heard of that are, you know, that, you know, they're giving these bands shots and they're doing the right thing. And I've never heard any instances of the pay to play. I've never had that happen to me. I think I think one man's behavior fucked it up for us.
Okay.
I'm heartbroken. I'll do anything. I'll do anything to get back on there.
That's what I'm saying. That was always frustrating because I go to a lot of these fests and it's like, why is Boba Flex? And they're all owned by AEG and Danny. Well, a lot of them are. So, okay. Thanks for answering that question.
Well, you know how it is. You fuck up one of them. It's a big industry, but it's pretty small. You know what I mean? Everybody talks to everybody. And I don't know. Like I said, I'd do anything to mend that relationship. And so I hope that's fixable.
So,
like I said, I'm not 100% sure. That's what it is. But that's got to be what it is, man. That's like we put on a good show. We do have a large fan base. So, I mean, it's got to be something like that.
So going to, you know, I'm guessing you're itching to get back on the road. Or is it nice, actually, with COVID to finally have a break?
No.
You want to get on the road.
Oh, my God. This is what I do. It's like being a sheep herding dog that someone thought was smart to put in a townhome.
Okay. All right. So you're ready to roll. Yeah. Okay. So when you're touring, here's another question for you is, you know, it seems like you hook up with a promoter for a town, Denver, and it's, you know, you played Herman's Hideaway almost like clockwork once a year. And that's why I've seen you out here. So, but my question is a lot of times, do the bands have any control over the local promoter deciding to put 19 bands before you and you guys start playing at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday? Because for the 30,
That's called not a great promoter.
Okay.
You don't have a whole, I mean, it depends. It's like, you know, if you're going into a place that you do okay at, you have, you know, you do shitty or no one knows what's going to happen, then yeah, you don't have much control. But if you're going to a place where you know that you're going to sell out, then yeah, you have more control. And what we've learned over the years is, you know, promoting shows is hard. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. I feel like it's those people kind of could be gambling addicts. You know, like you win big this night, you lose big this night. And it's very, like, to me, it would be so stressful. So it's like promoters are very important because it is a tough business. And the good ones, you make relationships with and you keep them forever and you do anything for them. And I'm sure they feel that same way about bands that do great or are easy to work with and do draw crowds and do their promotion on their ends. So you build these great relationships with promoters. And sometimes you know, you're going into areas or promoters get out of the game and it's a new guy. So sometimes you never know what you're getting into. But we've built quite a rapport with a lot of people that, like, you know, if you get a new booking agent, they say, I'm working with this guy again. No, you're not. You're working with this guy. So you kind of try to stay in contact with those people that you know that that do great work and don't just, hey, here's 19 bands that are going to sell tickets to their friends that are going to leave. Or at the same time, I understand where the crowd's coming from. It's like on a Tuesday, it's called the late movie at 9 o'clock for a reason.
It's right.
Like, you know what I mean? Who wants to be in a bar at 1:30 in the morning besides hardcore alcoholics that don't want to go home?
Well, that's my thing is that I think this strategy, this is widespread, but in Denver, like, for example, the reason I'm bringing this up is there's been times where I unfortunately could not see you guys live because I knew that you wouldn't start until 11 because they put five bands before it. And I've got kids, you know, their average rock fan is probably in their 30s. And I had to get up at 8 a.m. for work. So it's like, what is the point? It actually makes you not want to go sometimes. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And so, like, so what I've learned over the years is the earlier you play, the more people you gain.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even if someone doesn't know who you are and they're there to see their buddy's band and they stick around for a little while and have some drinks and talk and you come on and you're good and they go, holy shit, who's this? But, you know, at midnight or, you know, you're going on at midnight and I want to keep up the bar sales and all that stuff. Again, that's a shitty, that doesn't work. And I won't do it anymore. I won't do it anymore. My contract says 10 o'clock at the latest. That's on a Saturday. 9 o'clock on Monday through Thursday. I won't do it because I don't want to be in the bar at midnight. I don't want to be, you know what I mean? And I want to play to the largest crowd possible. And, you know, our fans are going to stick around. But, you know, the new people that don't know who you are, that happen to be in the venue, you know, how in the hell would they see you at midnight? Who in the hell wants to be there? You sell it just from a business standpoint, you sell more merch, you gain more fans. Everybody's happy. They're not wasted out of their mind. They remember the show. It's just better for everyone. You know, with the Lonely Ones, I'm not sure how it's going to go. So I feel like we prepared for so far so good. Some of the shows that are coming in, I thought we were going to go back to being a $300 a night band.
Right.
That's not been the case, thank God.
Right.
But at the same time, we have to treat it that way. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if people are going to give a shit what's going to happen. So, you know, we're definitely scaling everything down, and we're coming in on a business model of we have to gain, you know, we'll open for, if a local band's big, we'll open for them. There's no disrespect to us that, you know, it's like, I want to play in front of the most people and let people hear our music. I don't care if we have to set up in front of their drums or anything like that. It's like, let's get out there and let's play. We've scaled everything back. You know, we're not going to come out with as much crew and as much, you know, 17 amps on stage and that wall of sound. Like, our everything, it's different now. It's like, you know, let's get in, let's put on the best show possible, and you know, in front of as many people as possible, and whatever we have to do that is totally fine. In terms of a band that's, you know, that's bigger than us in that area, then damn right they should be the headliner.
Sure. Okay. So let's move back to Spotify and seeing all this. So what is the chance, like you mentioned algorithm, but this happened to me and this is where I think one of the biggest risks you can have changing your name is the Lonely Ones. Still, I have this thing called New Release Radar that I get every week. And supposedly it's supposed to give me all the bands I enjoy, and Lonely Ones, just so you know, has never shown up in there when their singles come out. Maybe that's already fixed there, but is that a challenge of, you know, you move from Bobo Flux and like, I want that to show up. You know what I mean? I've had to hunt down your singles sometimes.
Yeah. We're really starting to figure out Spotify. We've got a guy that came on board on the team that we're building this wonderful team of people. Shauna is one of them. And she's brought in some really quality people. We're figuring out all the things of Spotify. There's a lot of really cool things that you can do. But it's new, you know, it's newer to us. So we brought in a guy that's, you know, opened our eyes to a lot of things. And now we're on New Release. The Lonely Ones is on New Release Radar. Flash is on New Release Radar. And it's that kind of thing where if, you know, Spotify wants you to stay on their platform. So you do have to, when the guy from Spotify came out, the CEO of Spotify came out and said what he said like a week ago, it pissed everybody off.
Yeah.
But he's not wrong. You know what I mean? He's not wrong. It's like, you have to release new music. You have to constantly stay in people's faces. And then those algorithms start to take off and they start to, you know, they work for you. We're in that beginning stages where, you know, we're figuring out the ways to navigate an ever-changing music industry. And we're, you know, Jimmy's smarter at those things than I am.
It's got to be difficult. I'm just saying that's kind of a risk. And then is there a big payoff? Well, not big because it's Spotify money, but like getting on those, you know how you get these things that say like classic rock playlists or new rock playlists, and it's these set things that Spotify spits out. Like, how do you get on that? Is this just random? And then do you get more? I'm assuming you get a shitload more plays when you get thrown in those.
You do. So once you land one, they start to kind of like there's certain tiers. Like, so, you know, if you get up to, you know, 10,000 monthly followers, then it starts to push you out to more people.
Okay.
So I would never thought I would say algorithms.
I know.
The algorithms can work for you. You got to do the things, you know, you got to let Spotify know that you give a shit about their platform, which is like any platform. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
You know, if a radio station's going to play you, you got to give that radio station love in order for them to give a shit about your band. They get hundreds of thousands of submissions a year. And, you know, if you aren't plugging them, they're not going to plug you. It's the way it works in anything. You know, scratch your back, I'll scratch mine. And Spotify is the same way. So when you start to get on those playlists, yes, you start to get way more ears on your song. Now, it's like anything. You can you can get put out there, and if nobody gives a shit, nobody gives a shit. But people start to connect with it and stuff. It's this organic kind of growing thing. And we're figuring that out. And we've been pretty lucky as far as, you know, starting a new band and where our numbers are and things like that. I'm really happy. Like, holy shit, there's that many people listening to this band that hasn't even toured yet. And, you know, people don't even know about yet. It's moving pretty well. And then, like I said, we're bringing people on the team that are helping do that. It's like almost like we're creating our own label, which, you know, the Lonely Ones wants to do something different. We were totally independent with Boba Flex, and it was wonderful. It was a lot of work. I'd kind of like to do it differently and see if any record labels are interested, and, you know, see if we're interested in the kind of things that they bring to the table, because we can do it independently. I just like to open for Shinedown and Papa Roach for the rest of the year. You know what I mean?
I'd like to
swing for the fences this time. And the independent thing was great. And the reason we did that was because, you know, we were on TVT Records, and they were the biggest independent label in the world, and they went bankrupt.
Yep.
Because of how fast the music industry changed. So it was scary for us to even, and it was a nightmare. We were owned by a bank for 2 years, and we had to hire attorneys and do all these crazy things to just try to be a band again, through no fault of our own. So it was scary. At that time, we thought, you know, all the record labels could go away. You know, the big ones could go away. Who knows what's going to happen? So we decided to just kind of play it close to the chest and do our own independent thing. Well, those record labels had weathered the storm, and they, you know, they'd figured out the way to keep the music industry moving, and we want to be a part of that again.
So go into that a little bit more, because I was always a little confused on that. So TBT, I think, even had bands like Clutch on it.
They had Seven Dust. They had the first couple Nine Inch Nails records. They had Little John, the Ying Yang Twins. They were a big, big label. They were doing some incredible things. They had Default. They had, I mean, their roster was massive. They had New Year's Day. And they were doing great. And when they signed us, they were like, we want to show the world, because they did. They had Pitbull, and they were kind of focused on the hip hop world, and they were having great success with that. But then when they signed us, they were like, we want to show that we can do rock again too. And we were like, I called my mom. I was like, Mama, you know, I think this might be it.
Right.
And then bam, they went bankrupt out of nowhere. I don't know why, you know what I mean? They were holding it in, didn't really tell us why. It was just over. And then a bank owned us, and we couldn't release music. We couldn't do anything for a long time. We were playing shows, selling t-shirts just to pay attorneys to tell us, you're screwed one day. No, you're out the next day. No, you're screwed. No, you're out. No, you're screwed. And it went on forever. So, you know, that was a really, really hard thing to deal with, because all we wanted to do was play music, and you know, we were starting to do really, really well. And so it was just a scary thing. We didn't know what was going to happen. It wasn't like we were like, screw the big record labels or anything like that. We were just like, they could all go away. Who knows? You know, there used to be a bunch of lamp oil salesmen that ruled the world, and now, you know, now they're gone. So we didn't know what was going to happen. So we just kind of thought, well, we can count on ourselves. And then we got into a business model where we were making really good money and we weren't splitting it with anybody. And it just kind of just stayed that way. And it was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, slower than you would on a major record label with the amount of promotions and connections that they had. But it was, you know, we were paying for our houses and you know, doing the things that we needed to do. So it was kind of scary to let that go. But the beautiful thing is, because of that, we have 8 albums that, you know, 3 of us own that'll never go away. And it keeps raising, the numbers keep going up on the streaming platforms and the iTunes and stuff like that. So we're allowed to, it makes us able to take more risks with the Lonely Ones, because we're able to have that, you know, that cushion from the thing that we built with Boba Flex that keeps on giving.
So do you own Hell in My Heart now, or is it still?
No, we own, from Hell in My Heart on is ours.
Okay. Gotcha. So you got that back.
No, we always owned it.
Oh, okay. So it was the one right before that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Got it.
Tales from Dirt Town.
Dirt Town. Yeah. Okay. Okay. That's good. So let me see. I'm just going through my little list here. Are you still good with time?
Oh, yeah, man. I talk about myself. I can do that all day.
Okay. You like your sound? Yeah, I'll give you the link so you can listen to the sound of your own voice later, too. Right?
Right on.
All right. So I guess going with that, besides the music label part, you know, sometimes we have this thing called perfectly rated on the show where we look at bands. We're like, okay, I get why this band got to a certain level, even though they've got this following and things like that. Where for Bubble Flex, we look at, okay, they look like rock stars, they sound great. Like usually, there's like one thing that's wrong. Is my point. They look like rock stars, great live, etc. The one thing, just curious, looking back with the name changes. The name Bubble Flex Me personally kind of reminded me of, you know, it's a Star Wars reference, Nerf Herder. When I first hear that name, the band that you are was not the vision that I saw.
I agree. I feel like that was a big mistake. I feel like if we'd have had a name like the Kill City Hitmen or something, we'd have got a lot farther.
Okay.
It was one of the reasons why I was like, when you know, because we discussed we should just continue as Bubble Flex. We have this. You know, we can make money. We can do this. We can do things more efficient. But I was like, I want to get away from that name. That name turns people off. It just does. You know, some people are like, I love the name, but some people just can't get past it. And it doesn't make any fucking sense.
But it right.
was, you know, it was conceived at a time when bands like Limp Bizkit and Hoobastank were topping the charts, and it didn't. And the names like Kiss and Poison were already taken.
Right. There's only so many band names. So at least it's not. Well, the good thing for it is it doesn't have the word Stone or Black in it, because that's every other band name, right? Okay. Well, that's.
But I agree with you. That name just. If I could go back in time, I go, what the fuck are you? What were you thinking? But it became its own thing, and then became too far into the game to change it. And,
right.
And it became, people knew what it was. But newer people are like, huh? And you would play them the music. I'd see it, and I'd countless stories of people would play people music. This band's awesome. Who isn't? And they'd say Bubble Flex. And they go, oh, I heard of that band. I thought they were whatever. You know, it's just that. I mean, you know, having the experience and stuff. It's like, you know, the name is super important, and that name just fucking stupid.
Back. I got a million reasons why I lied. My dream.
about Eloquent Demons for a band name? Pretty badass name.
That's a good one. Like, right? You know, we had these great titles like Apologize for Nothing. And I loved our music and I loved our songs and stuff. But that name, like, you know how it is. It's like you said, rate this band. There's the one glaring thing that we should have done different way back. If I could go back in time and tell my younger self, do not name the band Bobaplex.
Wow. That's refreshing to hear. Seriously, because I was like, should I ask this question or is he going to be pissed?
So, no, so. Hell no. I mean, that's why I said, you know, we're starting a new band. I want to get out from under that name. We did some wonderful things with the band, but, you know, we did some pretty fucking stupid things too. And I will never, and that's with anything, you know, so I'm not like, you know, upset about it. It's just, you know, you learn and you grow and it's like, we need a cool name, man.
Yeah, look at you. You're a musician with that can actually have self-reflection and critical thought. You're an innovator, Marty.
I think so.
Right? Yeah. Well, I have something actually just on the side to ask, and that is in your bio, and I've also thought this is kind of interesting, is so you are actually related to the McCoys of the McCoy and Hatfield. Absolutely. Hatfield feud from because you're originally from West Virginia, correct?
Yep, born and raised.
So what is that, like fourth, fifth generation? I don't even know how far the back that goes.
I don't even know. Like, to me, it wasn't all that interesting. It was just, yeah, that's, you know, it was like, you know, the what really happened was, you know, when I really started to take pride in that was because magazines and radio stations and stuff started to take interest in it when Kevin Costner came out with the movie again.
So, okay.
Like, I really wasn't interested and not that I wasn't interested. I mean, knew about it and it, you know, it's American history and stuff like that, but it wasn't that big a deal to me. But then when radio stations and stuff and magazines that we couldn't get into, now all of a sudden they're like, oh, they're from the Hatfields and McCoys, these crazy rednecks that shot each other over a pig. I just was like, okay, cool. Yeah. That's our way in. Let's
soundbite. Yep. Sure. Yep. An angle. Here's a little fact for you though. Are you aware that the Hatfield McCoy feud is featured in a musical comedy dinner show in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee?
Absolutely.
Oh, you do? Have you seen it?
Oh no, I haven't seen it, but people send me everything. Like, people send me all kinds of crazy stuff and people sent me the book and I've seen people that went to that and sent me pictures like, oh my god, did you know this is going on? What's so funny is it wasn't the bloodiest feud in American history. It was the hill people are killing each other. It was like the first sensationalized kind of thing in the media.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? It just was very interesting to people. Like, oh, these rednecks up in the mountains are doing these things. And that's the thing about being from West Virginia that I hear all the time. You know, people like, what's it like living in West Virginia? Like everywhere else, we have cars and houses and the internet and doctors. Yeah, and
some hills.
And skyscrapers and buildings and indoor plumbing. It's like everywhere else. I get it. But, you know, maybe we're a little late on the mullet and tight rolling our jeans. But it's not this crazy racist hillbilly place. It's very, very progressive and the people are wonderful and we all have our teeth and there's dentists there and there's, you know, two major colleges there and Jerry West from the NBA's from there. And you know, I mean, there's wonderful people there. And the funniest thing was people like, what's it? What do you do in Virginia? I go, nothing. I'm from West Virginia. What's the same place, isn't it? I go, I'm the fucking idiot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm the uneducated person. I don't think you live in Dakota.
Yeah. The Dakota.
I know that you don't live in Carolina. It's West Virginia. It's a different state. How far is it from the beach? Well, a fucking state away from the beach.
I've been to the old Mexico, but I've never been to the new Mexico.
Right on. It's like it cracks me up. Like, you know, and you're Southern. I go, no, we're on the other side of the Mason-Dixon line. I'm the fucking idiot.
You have a map. You just show them it.
I used to do that to booking agents. I would send them maps. I'm your new booking agent, and before we started the relationship, I would send him a map. I need you to know the distance between these fucking places.
Yeah, you can't have me go to this town to that town in the next day.
It's only a 15-hour drive. 10 of those in a row will make a person insane.
Yeah. So, but I was like, how can you make a musical comedy out of the Hatfield McCoy? I mean, is there a comedy about, you know, Abraham Lincoln's assassination? I mean, just what the hell? That's quite an innovation, right?
It's like I said, it was so interesting. And it still, like, we would go play L.A. and people go, I hate L.A. and this and that. And we would go and we'd have a good crowd because they wanted to see the interest. What are these interesting hill rednecks? Like it was a, like they were coming to see Wrong Turn or something in person. And I'm like, well, no, my accent's just sexy. That's the only difference between the two of us.
All right. So, right now, what is the best way to support the Lonely Ones, both in ways like be it purchase, you know, downloads and things like that, or product, or just socially, what would you like to see, you know, people just, listening, you know, to this?
Just the same things that you've always done. You know, if you love the band and the band's music speaks to you, just do what you've always done. You know, come to the show, enjoy yourself. If you want to wear a t-shirt, get one. If you want to, you know, on Spotify, add us to your playlist. On Pandora, give us a thumbs up. If you're listening to your local radio station, they're not playing us, and you feel that passionate about it, call them up. Say, hey, maybe play this. And call your favorite DJ up and tell them that you want to hear it on the station. See what it sounds like coming through the big speakers. You know, it's like, that's the wonderful thing about our job, is our fans are the fuel and the reason we do it, the reason we're allowed to do it. And they're pretty wonderful. People connect with music on such a level that, you know, when someone sends me a picture that they hand drew of me, it's like, it's a, you know, or something like that, or buys a t-shirt or you know, sends a picture of the, you know, us on their stereo and stuff. It's like people go out of their way to let you know that they enjoy your music, and you know, so I can't ask them to do anything else. They're doing it on their own, and it's amazing, and I'm quite honestly blown away that, you know, when people connect with music, how much it moves them. And how much what they do to show you how much it moves them is fucking incredible.
So, also, as far as the album release date, do you have one, or at least the month? And will there be a physical or just digital?
There will be a physical one, but we're just going to release the singles, a single, like once a month, once every
sure.
until the album's out. And that way it keeps, you know, like I said, people don't go buy records like they used to anymore. The way people consume music has changed so much. Well, it actually hasn't. There was a moment there in time where albums were important. It used to be a singles-driven market. It's back to a singles-driven market. So that's, you know, we want to release a song, give them time to really you know, digest that song, and then bam, hit them with another one. That way, you know how you get a record and some of the songs that slip through the cracks, and then 5 years later, 5 years later, you go, why did I not love that song? Well, I don't want to give them a chance to do that. I want to, you know, give it to them, give them time to digest, because they're doing the same thing with a bunch of other artists that they like. Here comes a single from it's like exciting. It's like Christmas every month. And that's just the way people get music. And, you know, I hate to say it, but that's the way I get music now too. That's what I do now too. It's like, oh shit, the new single's out. Royal Bliss's single just came out yesterday. And I got it. I downloaded it this morning. I can't wait for the next one, but you know, it's like, people's attention spans and their time, and people are working longer hours, and the time to sit back and smoke a joint and put headphones on and listen to a record are few and far between. So, you know, you have to adapt to the way people's lifestyles are. And I think that's the way it is. You give them one song and you give them another one after they're tired of that one, which is a lot faster than it used to be.
Right on. But the full album, do you have the month or a release date in plan?
No.
Okay.
Just whenever.
Okay.
Know, like I said, the pandemic has caused us to slow down a little bit.
Right.
But that was always the plan, was the releases. Our plan was to release a song every 10 days until the album was out.
Gotcha.
With a video. And we were on schedule. Man, we were on schedule. I was like, I love schedules. You know, and we were on schedule, and then bam, everything shut down. It was just like, not only did it hurt the schedule, but it mentally, it was like, what the fuck is happening? It was really, really scary. Not that it's not scary now, but it was really, really scary at first. Like, holy shit. You know, I'm going to know a lot of people that are not here anymore. Right. I do know people that are not here anymore. So it does piss me off when people say this is a big hoax.
I don't understand that either. I know at least five people that are they personally they got over it, but it's like, okay, everything's political these days, right? We're not going to get into that, but it's ridiculous. Yes,
we can get into it. It's like, and I understand, you know, it's like I'm empathetic to people that feel like it's a hoax because it is new information and it is scary and it does feel like, well, what the fuck is happening? But, you know, at the same time, it's new information. When new information comes out, things change. And and when there's a brand new virus and they're trying to figure out what's happening and they're trying to keep people from dying on a mass scale, there's going to be mistakes made and there's going to be people that don't believe it. And there's going to be people. I mean, the whole thing with the internet of, you know, Hillary Clinton's eating children's adrenochrome and shit. It's like, what the fuck is that?
She's hungry.
My girlfriend works in, she's an abuse, domestic violence abuse counselor. She has a master's in sexuality. She knows about real sex trafficking. She's worked with people that have come out of it. She's opened my eyes to a lot of things. And sex trafficking is real. Not Israel.
I heard you. I can understand the ant and ant, and I'm hearing you, man. Yeah. You're enunciating correctly.
You know what I mean? Like, this is a real thing, but they're taking the focus away from how it really works and what really happens. And the main thing that people don't want to hear is sex trafficking happens because of poverty. People get into it a lot of times willingly because they're promised a better life or they're promised, you know, these things. And they get into these things willingly. Not that it was a good decision, but, you know, they because of, you know, maybe some a drug habit or maybe someone's manipulated them in. But the concept that they're being stolen is very, very rare. The reason these things are happening is because inequality in the system. But people don't want to fucking talk about that. They want to blow up this big thing that the boogeyman's coming in, stealing people at night, and the satanic panic that there's these rituals happening where they're eating children's adrenochrome and that somehow fucking Tom Hanks is a part of it. It's ridiculous. And it's everywhere. And it's like, I would tell you, if this stuff was true, I would have stitched my own outfit like a super, like a dark vigilante and went out and beat the fucking people to death. I don't want it to be true, but it's not true. It's right. Like with Pizzagate and all these things were debunked easily when someone.
I forgot. I did know that one. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. When someone who actually knows how to do research and investigative journalism looked into it, it's bullshit. But, you know, you got the internet and YouTube. Someone makes a YouTube video with some pretty fancy graphics and says these things. And these people, you know, people believe it on a mass scale. It's fucking dangerous. So it takes away from what's actually happening. You know, it takes away from. Sex trafficking is real. And you know, it's like we glorize pimps. That's a sex trafficker. Someone that, you know what I mean? We glorize pimps. And I remember T-shirts of pimps and hoes and all this shit just not long ago. And stuff like that. That's a sex trafficker. That is what it actually, Jeffrey Epstein is what it actually looks like. This glorified version of, you know what I mean? This outlandish version is taken away from what it actually fucking looks like. And people don't want to look that in the fucking face because they could actually make a change for that. You know,
how about this then? How about we make a stand, Marty, and tell people actually read the article, not just the headline and the graphic. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like these videos of the fall of the cabal and all that shit. I'm no, you know, I'm not oblivious to there's major corruption and major fucked up things. And I'm blown away by Chris Hansen's TV show and the amount of people that do want to do these fucked up things. And that are doing these fucked up things. Fuck, what the fuck's Tom Hanks got to pay for it for? He didn't do nothing. Or, but, you know, you don't know the Tom Hanks story or he's in on it. And the largest, and they're harvesting children's adrenochrome, which is fucking bullshit. That doesn't work that way. And they're eating it so they can have power and the satanic, it's insanity. It's like, get off the internet. And when they say, I've researched it, they go, you've never taken a college class where you have to cite 3 to 5 sources for your point, or you failed the fucking class, because a YouTube video isn't that.
Well, I'm definitely Googling Tom Hanks after this call. And then the other part is, I just have to say, can we at least, not to move on from the serious things that you're talking about.
We should move on. It's driving me nuts. We should move on.
Okay. But can we both agree, though, that the Earth is flat? Can we at least do that?
I don't think it is.
I've seen the video, Marty.
I would walk into a court of law and with a picture of, you know, the planet Earth from space and throw it down on the table and say exhibit A, and then I would say arrest my case.
That's special effects. It's not real, Marty. It's special effects.
Well, I mean, it's like, I understand not trusting the government. I don't trust the government either, but it's like there are things, you know, it's like there are real things that need attention instead of these huge fucking crazy conspiracy theories that are taken away from the real problem.
All right.
That are fixable problems.
Yes.
That we have to look at ourselves and look at our society and say, this may not affect me, but it still needs my attention.
Well, I think one thing that's going to solve problems is when the Lonely Ones get back on their flat Earth tour. So when is that going to kick off or play? I know everything's kind of in a state of flux right now, but like, are you guys going to go on your own tour? Is there maybe talk of a package tour that you've kind of worked out?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
Like, you know, we have a great booking agent, Alex Gilbert. I always mention everybody's names because I feel like they, you know, give credit where credit's due, and they deserve to be, you know, the people behind the scenes deserve their, you know, they do a lot of things for us, and we get all the, you know, the glory. But Alex Gilbert's really smart. He's got some stuff booked in October, but he's not sure that's going to happen.
Right.
I really hope it does. But, you know, I at the same time, it's like I hope that if it does happen, that it's safe, you know, that the virus is contained and that it's a smart move to do. I really want to get back to playing, but I don't want to get anybody sick. And right. I feel like it's my, you know, I don't feel like it's my responsibility to tell people, you know, I'm smarter than you, and we're not going to play shows because I know what's best for you. I just hope that the science and the data comes back that it's safe and that's something that we can do. And if it's not, then we won't do it. You know what I mean?
But
looking like October.
Okay. All right. But Great White did it. So everything should be fine.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, we are free to do what we want. Right. And if people want to go to concerts and stuff, it's up to them if they want to go. It's, you know, it's like if I'm at that concert, I will stay backstage. I will wear my mask. I will, you know, not come out in the crowd like I used to and hang out and do stuff, because, you know, I do worry about, you know, my parents are older, and I do worry about my responsibility to keep, you know, other human beings on our planet safe. But, you know, it's people make their own decisions and they can do what they want to do. Just quit looking at the YouTube videos.
Yes, I agree. So, so you want to wrap this up?
Nope. I think we need to go deeper into this Tom Hanks thing.
I'll tell you what. We'll do a follow-up. We'll do an all Tom Hanks episode next time. What say you?
Like, look into it, and then you tell me if I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, I'll eat my words. I just don't think I am.
Or you'll eat, what was that they eat? They're eating?
Adrenochrome.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's the, I'll hold you to that. All right.
Yeah. I'm so exhausted. My Facebook feed is full of people talking about this. Like it's real.
Oh boy. Wow.
It's the same people that said Obama was bringing in martial law and there were FEMA camps for our dead bodies and they were turning Walmarts. But my thing is like, well, that didn't happen. So do you just go on gloss over that and move on to the next thing, or are you going to say you were wrong?
Yes. Well, you won't get that from me, but,
all right, I'll let you go.
Well, here's the deal. So everybody out there, make sure, what's the name of the next single? Real Big Trouble. Is that accurate?
Real Big Trouble. It's a love song.
A love song from the Lonely Ones. Make sure you follow them on your streaming platform of choice, or download from iTunes or anywhere you can get your music. Are you guys on Bandcamp too?
Yep, we're on everything.
Okay, cool.
He's the younger brain that knows all these things that I have no idea what he's talking about.
Fair enough. All right, man. Well, I wish you the best and looking forward to seeing you guys back on tour.
All right, man. Thanks so much for thinking about our band and having us on, man. It means a lot to me.
Appreciate it, Marty. Have a great one.
Better, brother.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.